I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. This is the way our guest Dan Knight imagines the sound of Jackson Pollock's painting called Portrait of H.M. It's typical Jackson Pollock, colors splashed on a canvas. The colors are mostly gray and black, though there are smudges of yellow, green, and blue. The painting on the surface looks random, but it's meticulous. If it's true that H.M. stands for Herman Melville, then somewhere in there may be Moby Dick. It's all up for interpretation. Dan Knight is a jazz composer who uses 20th century artists to inspire his work. About 2 years ago, he went to the Museum of Art at the University of Iowa and selected 9 pieces from the permanent collection to paint, so to speak. His palette is made up of musical notes and scales. His brushes are the piano keys. His pièce de résistance is a CD of compositions based on the visual art of Philip Guston, Henri Matisse, Juan Miró, and others. His CD is called Pictures at an Exhibition. Connection listeners, we're painting with music this hour. What do you hear when you see Picasso's Three Women, or Monet's Haystacks, or Andy Warhol's Campbell Soup Cans, for that matter? And conversely, what do you see when you hear Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, or Bill Evans's version of Here's That Rainy Day? Make the color of music connection with Dan Knight. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Welcome, Dan Knight.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to hear your CD, and it's going to be maybe more wonderful to hear you at our very own Connection Steinway.
There you go.
We want to hear you play. We want to hear you play in color. The technical term for some of this stuff is synesthesia.
Yes.
The sort of drift from one sense experience to another of a kind of artistic idea. It's actually something you wonder about all the time. If Brahms had been a painter, you know, what would it look like?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great question. It's one of the things I've asked myself, actually. You know, and it's what does the color blue sound like? What does and when I hear blue, I hear this really bright blue. If I want to make it darker, this. If I want to make it pastel, I can play here. If I want to hear white, I can do this. Key of C, all white notes.
That's a funny connection, and maybe not a sound one. The fact that key of C is white notes. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It seems like it works for me because that's what I hear. Maybe it just comes from, I played the piano. I'm 46 years old now, almost 47. I played the piano for 42 years. So when I look at this spot on the keyboard, I hear this sound. You know. So with maybe that's part of the connection for me. Maybe that this is white keys, white notes.
Give us a hot pink sound.
Hot pink is almost red. I like a lot of these seventh chords, ninth chords, 11th chords, these kind of things that Monet used to paint with. This is what I heard When my wife and I went to Monet's Garden in Giverny last summer, actually, I had the misfortune, I thought it was a misfortune at the time of having my camera break. And I thought to myself, you know, what am I going to do? You know, these beautiful, beautiful flowers, and this is the garden where Monet painted for years and years and years. We were going to go to the Pont Japonais and see the water lilies and do the whole thing. And I took my glasses off and started to rub my head. And I looked up and I saw this kind of like myopic view of color. And it was just exactly what I was seeing on the canvas. And I thought to myself, how would he paint that sound? You know, Monet was going after exactly the same thing. Monet said that the thing that challenged him the most was trying to paint the movement of grass beneath water. He said that was the thing that got him going, that stirred his blood, that made him passionate about what he was doing. And that's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to write music and to play music that's kind of meaningful to me and that stirs that kind of passion, but it comes from many different areas. So
we speak of, you know, Debussy and Ravel to some extent as the Monets of the keyboard.
Yes, very much.
And musical impressions, what does that get you?
How
far does that get us down?
Oh, well, that comes really close, because that's what they were trying to do. Those people were trying to encapsulate a feeling. They were trying to tell a story with what they were doing. And sometimes it was, you know, more times than not, it was something.
The girl with the flaxen hair, that
yes,
kind of
exactly,
thing. It has
yeah.
colors in it.
And you can play a jazz version of that, by the way. It's a nice piece to improvise on. Just take a theme and move it around a little bit. But does it work there? This is where it was written. Here, but listen to this one key differently. I'm going to play that from G5 to
good.
G. You hear the difference? It's a different piece. It's totally, completely different. Mm. And it's because it's a different color. It's moved from something delicate and vibrant I like to think of it as G flat as either being dark green, if I think about it as a flat, or bright green, kind of if I think about it as a sharp, because I think of flats as being darker colors and sharps as being bright things.
This is interesting. This gets pretty refined. Does G flat sound different to you than F sharp?
Well, yes. Let me ask a different question. It's the same kind of thing. Is light a particle or is it a wave? It depends on what you ask it to be. You know, if you ask light to be
G flat is F sharp, and yet composers write them
exactly.
write pieces
exactly.
differently. Some
mm-hmm.
will write the piece in
mm-hmm.
one, some the other. Can you
right.
do you
because
hear it
me,
differently?
Yeah,
or not?
Because it does. It sounds like two completely different keys. I'm going to play you something that sounds like say maybe dark green. And I'm going to use the key of G flat for that. And I don't know if you'll hear the difference now, but I'm going to play something for you in bright green. Do you hear a difference? Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's something. But
do I see a difference? You mean?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm a suggestible guy. I'll follow your lead, Dan. This business about color—it's so interesting. Bach, of course, a lot of composers when they do suites of or a set of etudes, there will be one in every key. Bach wrote, of course, organ and piano and. Mm-hmm. Work in every key, and he was very acutely aware, as refined players are, of the different colors.
Very much so.
But I'm never quite, it may be just out of my grasp. How to quite understand it. How's to explain or to hear? Here, everybody always speaks of the key of G as a bright key.
Mm-hmm. I hear it as a key, a really bright blue, really bright blue, kind of royal blue. Almost.
But just what do we mean by color in music? I remember watching Seiji Ozawa rehearsing the Boston Symphony a few years ago, and he sort of stopped the players, and these are pros, and he maybe the cello section and said, you know, bar 147, color change. Be aware. And they said, okay. But what did he mean by that, the color of notes?
You know, it's a mystery. I like to think of music as being a means of creating a magical state. And that's what that's about. It's about asking us to think of something in a way totally different than we're used to thinking about it. Mm. And when we do that, we open ourselves to a whole realm of possibilities that otherwise is closed to us.
Speaking of magical states, I hear a lot of Bill Evans in your playing. I'd like
you
to introduce a Bill Evans version of a Frank Sinatra song, Here's That Rainy Day, where we ought to see something. What should we be seeing?
This is Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke. Here's That Rainy Day. Bill Evans is doing this in the key of B. What I hear is something really melancholy, but pastel, very, very rich, rich, rich watercolor. It's something that's delicate, but very strong.
Let's hear it. I'm going to play when I grow up. What's the color here? Pretty dark mood.
It is. It feels like walking through Iowa in autumn. It's kind of the early part of November. If you can imagine that feel that you get around the first part of November when it's chill and it's wet, but there's still some of the melancholy of autumn that's around you. You can still see the autumn colors around. They're a little subdued, but you know winter's coming, but autumn is still here and it won't give up yet.
But here's that heartbreak day that you were warned about.
Yeah, there it is.
So much of our music is explicitly visual.
Very much so.
I'd like to get you to introduce a little Duke Ellington, too. I mean, he loved to tell stories, but also cast images and use colors in his pieces.
Very much so. Very much so. I'm familiar with one piece, especially with all the work that came from Duke Ellington's trio CD, or actually recording, the Money Jungle. I had the great fortune to go to the jazz program at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in 1988, and I had the great fortune to study with Billy Taylor for a couple of weeks, who from that time kind of became my mentor. One of the great things that happened during that time was I got to study with Max Roach. Max was my combo coach there. And Max told us this great story about the Money Jungle. You know, we asked him, he said, what was it like to play with Ellington? What was that whole thing like? And he said Charles Mingus came in and they did maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and Duke was so happy to be there in that group that they played stride piano the whole time. And he looked up and he said, you know, all of a sudden Charles Mingus was gone. He wasn't in the studio. And Duke said, Max, what happened? And Max said, I don't know, but I'll go find out. So he went out, and Charlie was out by the elevator. And he said, man, he's playing so many notes down here in the low part of the piano. I don't have any place to play. He doesn't need me. I'm going home. So they brought Mingus back in. Mingus cooled off a little bit. And Duke sat down and described some things to him. He said, when you're doing Money Jungle, for example, he said, I want you to imagine that you're riding in a carriage in Central Park. and it's an autumn, and there are leaves swirling all around you. They're falling from the sky like ticker tape. But he said, I want you to imagine that now that those leaves aren't leaves from trees, that they're dollar bills, and they're everywhere. They're falling just from the sky. It's like confetti falling around you. And he said, play with that image in mind. And that's what he did for all the pieces on Money Jungle, and even things like Harlem. It's like you can hear, he would describe to people a man in the street. You know, he said he would say, you can hear the guy in the street. He's out there. You can hear it. You can see the skyline. Everything is
as
there.
You speak about. Let's cue Ellington's Harlem Air Shaft.
Here's the man on the street. Listen to the similarities in his style and Monk's also. This is where Thelonious Monk came from. Man's making his way down the street, getting to his building. It's really angry. He's got a little transition here. Just imagine he's riding the elevator up. He's going to the top of the building. And the world is going to unfold in front of him in just about a few short seconds. Mr. Clark Terry will come and make his introduction. And the world is different. It's a happy place. It's free. Did you catch that little interchange there? Come on, Paul. And then Clark Terry will go into an extended solo here just shortly.
Connection listeners, can you see New York when you listen to Harlem Airshot? Can you see Jackson Pollock when our guest Dan Knight plays it? 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about what you see when you listen to music and what you hear when you look at sculpture, at painting, old and new. 1-800-423-8255. Dan Knight is our guest. Aldo is on the line.
Oh, hello.
Welcome, Aldo.
Oh, hello, Crystal Aldo. There is also the flip side of this, that there being a painter who had thought of color as musical idea and painted totally abstract. The most famous of all would be Kandinsky, the great Russian painter.
Oh, yeah. I've done some of his work, actually. I have a whole collection of Kandinsky's that
okay.
I've done. Yeah.
Because he was probably the first great abstract painter. Also, he wrote a lot of theory, a lot of books.
I agree, yeah.
And the idea was, for instance, you can compose a symphony of red or a symphony with red and yellow or blues, I mean, a different kind of color.
Yes.
You don't have to correspond necessarily to an image of a figure or a still life or a landscape or whatever.
Yes.
And also you had another artist. It was like a light artist. His name was Wilfred. Thomas Wilfred invented an instrument called the clavilox,
right,
where each note of the piano would correspond to a color, and that would be while he would be playing, there would be a large screen where the color would appear. So totally a symphony of colors again, played on the piano.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen that done actually with lasers also.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's a marvelous thing to be in the presence of. It's a great thing to see.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say, and I appreciate the programs usually.
Aldo,
I'm on your regular listening, Christopher.
Aldo, thank you.
Thanks very much.
1-800-423-8255 makes the seeing music and hearing art connection with Dan Knight. Erica is on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering how you resist or how you incorporate the era of the painting. Say, for a Warhol, how do you resist playing a jingle? Or for a Monet, something that's influenced by Renaissance with, you know, the sound of the lute and things like that. And I'm on a car phone, so I'm going to hang up and listen on the air.
Erica, thank you.
Oh, that's great. Well, my first response is I don't resist anything. I try to lead with my heart and then go from there. And usually that leads me in very honest directions. And I think if you were doing a Warhol, I think you would be wrong maybe not to put something jingoistic in it, you know, but you can make it elegant at the same time. And I like doing things that I have. I'm working on a new suite now. It's something that that I just completed, and I'm working on finding a place to do a first performance, actually.
Why don't you do it right here? You want to give
us
a taste?
There you go. I'm going to do a first performance. This is from the Le Jardin de Monet suite that I wrote following that the story I told you about earlier about losing my camera, literally. This is the Le Pont Japonais, the Japanese bridge, and I decided to use a piece, you know, something that just a little function that has five tones, kind of almost like a koto. And what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to start this as a bridge. I'm going to use this little motif, and I'm going to change it as it moves along. But I'm going to actually use it to go from one side of the bridge to the other, and like this.
Can you see the grass moving underwater, Connection listeners? 1-800-423-8255 makes the Dan Knight Connection. The Color of Sound, 1-800-423-TALK. Paul is calling from Whitman, Massachusetts. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome, good.
Hello, Paul.
I like the sounds that I'm hearing. I was wondering what some of your influences were, and I had a comment, too.
Sure. Some of my influences, I think this would work very well for the connection. My biggest influence was probably Captain Kangaroo. Captain Kangaroo had this great thing. It's a long story, but I'll make it a little short. He had this great thing where he had white gloves on a black background, and the gloves have this little rhythm. The music was in the background, and I was starting to take piano lessons when I was 5 years old, and my teacher said, listen to all the music you hear and try to find what kind of note gets one count and how many counts are in a measure. I sat and I listened to this. I ended up writing a letter to Captain Kangaroo. I got my Crayolas out one day, and I got an answer back. I got an answer back maybe a month, 6 weeks later, something like that, and he's like, you know, dear Danny, thank you for your interest. The song was Unsquare Dance from the Time Further Out album by Dave Brubeck, and that set me on a course that that one song just literally blew my mind, and it's never been the same. I went from that going to see Fantasia and wanting to be Leopold Stokowski. And seeing the colors that were involved in the kind of thing. I mean, that whole Disney movie is just exactly about what we're talking about today.
I see. I had a comment. I think the notion that musical notes would be associated with colors, I think it all comes down to people's experience with what they've seen and what they've heard
exactly.
At the same time. And so I don't really think you can associate colors to notes. I think we have feelings when we see things, and we have feelings that when we hear things too. When you earlier you were speaking about impressionism, and my point of view was always that if these artists and musicians were living in a time period such as the 1800s, they weren't bombarded with musical sound images and visual images like we are today. I think we're in our society, we reiterate things that we have seen and heard because it's everywhere around us. And I think it would have been really a great thing to have grown up in the older times when you could really pursue what was in your mind rather than what was around you all the time.
Well, I agree to that with the point, but I think part of that is I think we lose the historicity of some of the kind of instances we might be wanting to talk about. I know Fauvists were very, very, very interested in color. The whole idea of the Romantic movement in the 1800s that preceded the Impressionist movement was all about color and form and color as it related to nature. So we really don't need mass media to kind of bombard us with color and say this is what works or this is why it works. I think maybe mass media does that because it works. I think you know it's probably always worked, and I think it's probably always been that way. You know, that even I would even venture a guess that if you looked at the advertising that the Romans had back in you know whenever 500 BC, that you would probably see the same kind of things because it all comes down to human nature. And I think really that what it comes down to is people
hold the thought. We'll pick it up after the break. We're talking about the color of music with Dan Knight. This is The Connection. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Hearing Art, Seeing Music Connection.
I get images sometimes, color images. The lowest, the bass tone, say a low D, would be purple. The C would be red, and the F would be yellow. The hi-hat can be like a inside your body, your heartbeat, and always moving and always there and always very definite. The cymbals are like when pebbles are splashed in a pool of water, a big splash or a ripple, and the colors flow out like that in a circles.
That's the jazz drummer Eldon Jones talking about the color of percussion, in a way, from the film Different Drummer. Is he speaking your language, Dan Knight?
Very much so. Very much so. And I hope I'm speaking.
F is yellow. Low D is purple.
See, it's all about the association. It's about your own means, however you see the world. It's about putting that all together. So my color patterns are purely subjective, you know. And so I don't think that my D or my the idea that I think of the color D as being yellow is going to probably coincide with anybody else's version of that. But it's how I see the sound. It's just my way of working with it.
Dan Knight, I wish you'd give us some more of your sound. There's a tune you play called Autumn, Colorful Time.
Sure.
Give us the picture and the sound.
Great. This was inspired by a piece by Achille Emile Orthon Frise. It's Autumn 1902, and the colors are really, really, really vibrant. Just almost pure colors. They're reds and yellows and browns and greens. And if you can imagine, there's a little tiny road that kind of looks almost like a V that works its way through the painting. And to the lower right-hand corner, there's a little gentleman with a cart. And the leaves are kind of swirling around him. And it was that kind of image that I tried to use with this. So I'm going to actually start with some swirling leaves here. Work into the body of the piece from there.
Dan Knight's Autumn from the painting of the same name. 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about The Color of Music this hour with the pianist Dan Knight. 1-800-423-TALK. Roger is on the line.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've never called your show before, but I'm a big fan of The Connection and have been listening since the beginning.
Thank you, Roger.
Good morning.
I am so thrilled to hear you discuss this topic this morning for a reason that I'll make clear. I'm a totally blind writer from Arlington. I think what you and your guest are talking about only barely scratches the surface.
Exactly.
I live in a world of my other four senses. And when I write, of course, like many writers, I use music as inspiration. But there's the flip side of it, which is one of my most favorite places to go, strangely enough, is art museums, where I can't see the pictures.
Yes.
But what I find myself doing, if I can bring someone who's good at describing what they see in the pictures without rendering their opinions, I find my other four senses taking over.
Don't you find that they have a power all their own that's independent of the viewing?
Well, when I was a freshman in college in an introductory psychology course, my instructor made the mistake of telling us that 80% of all the information we receive comes through our sight. I took issue with that, and I said, I don't believe that's true. I think we've learned to sort of cancel out most of the other information that comes to us,
yes,
those who can see. And I think those who can see, in a sense, are missing out. There's nothing like experiencing, if I can say this on the radio, the pleasure of a woman through your other four senses. You know, the textures, the fragrances,
exactly,
the touch, the sounds, you know, the sounds of the material of the shoes or the clothing or the subtleties in the voice. I think you could probably spend easily a week or a month delving into the way that senses work together and
yes,
individually. And I think what you're doing, I can't wait to buy your CD.
Thank you so much.
And if you'll allow me, I plan to use it for considerable inspiration.
Oh, please. We'll be happy to send you one.
I have to say that for me, when I hear someone describe something they see, for instance, a summer barbecue, I mean, it's a wonderful thought. We all love them.
Sure.
But to me, you know, I taste the cooking burgers and the texture of the cheese and the crunch of the rolls. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. You know, and I could describe to you the feeling of the grit on your face as you're beginning to sweat in the middle of the afternoon and you're sitting in the sun and the wind hits you and all of a sudden you chill just for a little bit. You know, that's something that gets right to some of the things that I'm trying to do.
There is something so wonderful that so many of us miss about not utilizing all of our senses. And I think I feel sad for people that are so focused on what they see. Somebody made a comment to me yesterday at work about seeing pictures from the internet. And I said, well, that's so one-dimensional. And she said, what do you mean? I said, there's nothing like the real thing, or unlocking the doors to your other senses.
Exactly.
And feeling and knowing and experiencing instead of simply seeing. I don't have any criticism of what people see, but it doesn't go nearly as far as we humans are able to go.
Yes.
Roger, thank you. This is important. 1-800-423-8255 makes the seeing music connection. Chris is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Chris.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
I wanted to see if we could expand the synesthetic connection a little. We've talked a lot about color so far.
Sure.
I was wondering, do you think about texture at all? With like Jackson Pollock, does that imply staccato?
Yes,
nature?
Yes, very much.
Or does Van Gogh, you know, just can you play the clumps that he used in his really thick brush strokes? Does that come into?
Yeah, I can. Music? I can because Van Gogh was very pure about that. So if I wanted to say, I'm just going to improvise a piece for you now. I'm going to do Lilacs.
Great.
Dan Knight's Lilacs.
I don't know. You couldn't see that, but this part here, I can actually take. I took my fist and hit some of this and use my arm for a tonal texture. The same way Van Gogh would take his tube of paint and literally just apply it onto the canvas. That's the immediate response that I had to that.
I'd like you to listen to. You know, one of my favorites in this realm, and it's a Duke Ellington Degas suite.
Yes.
Late in his career, it was to be a movie. The movie was never made, but the music was. It was a kind of musical treatment of Impressionist paintings, Impressionists at the racetrack. And it was very specifically a set of paintings of... I'm trying to think of the name of the track in Paris, but gorgeous horses, of course, jockeys, silk, fancy,
sure.
Fancy folk.
Gorgeous people.
Yeah, and this was some of Duke's rumination on the Degas theme, Degas at the racetrack. Horses are out of the paddock, rather contentiously on their way to the starting gate.
That's it, Chris. Yeah. So you hear the nice contrast?
Thank you. Race hasn't started yet. Or has it?
It's getting ready. This is great chords.
The great Cootie Williams, too, I'm sure.
Very much so.
I mean, Duke had so many colors in his band to play with.
Oh, yes, and that's a really extremely important point because Duke's band members were collaborators. They were co-creators in those pieces that he did. And some of the later more concert, quote-unquote, works, he composed them kind of a little more thoroughly, but Duke would leave open spaces. He would leave open spaces, I mean, in bass chart, for example. The bassist would look over at him and say, you know, Duke, you left like two-thirds out in the middle of the piece. What am I supposed to do? And Duke would say, well, sweetheart, you know what to do. You put it in.
1-800-423-8255 is the Color of Music connection phone. Joel is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hello, Joel.
Hello.
Howdy. Well, this is a fascinating subject. I'm a composer and a conductor, and the sound of the color and the color of sound have been a lifelong occupation. And it's very interesting that Dan sees colors as pitch-specific or key-specific. I see them rather as range-specific, so that most low sounds on the piano or instruments like the contra bassoon, the double bass, will be kind of darkish, kind of brown or black.
That's a great way to think about that.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's not premeditated. I don't think about it.
See, you know, and I really believe that none of this is. It just becomes, it all is reflective of your experience, how it hits you. Yeah, that's a marvelous way of thinking about it.
Caller from Arlington said something about the interdependence of all the senses, and I think this is very, he said something else, too, about people shutting down these corollaries, if you don't want to call them associations.
True.
I think all children, in fact, in my experience, all children that I've asked do see the sounds that they hear. They also see colors for numbers and for letters of the alphabet.
Yes.
A
yes.
is white. And seldom it is, interestingly enough, that two people will see the same set of colors.
Well, that brings up a really interesting point, too. How do we know that what we see as red is really red to someone else? You know, it's all subjective, really, when it comes down to it. There's really no way to measure it empirically. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
We do know that we can say that what we see as red is seen by red as red by somebody else, because that color band has a specific frequency, and there are receptors in the retina that respond only to that frequency. What we cannot say about seeing the color red is whether someone else sees the shade of red that we do, because it's
exactly
a bandwidth.
Right. That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah.
Hey, Joel, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Jay is on the line.
Hello. I really appreciate this program as a studier of film scoring. I've always been curious as to, after listening to you, I've been curious as to how you hear modes, modal scales, and if you use them in your work.
I do, but you know, I don't use them purposefully. As a jazz musician, I've learned them all, and I try to work them into my vocabulary. But it's kind of like, you know, I can equate it to learning French. I mean, I'm learning French now. I play enough in Paris and somewhat in France that I have to learn.
Could you give us a little of Bill Evans's Blue and Green? Speaking of
yes.
modal scales that are
yes.
about colors.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dan Knight, I'm impressed, man. That's a beautiful piece.
Isn't that a good
song? Beautifully played. It's a wonderful song. Should we just play a short dose of, I don't know, Duke's probably most famous color tune, his Mood Indigo?
Certainly.
Let's do it. Indigo is blue, right?
Yes, very much.
Q. Hodges, yeah.
There's a beautiful painter right here. Listen to the texture of that. Sound that you would never have heard. You heard for the first time with Duke Ellington, with Jimmy Blanton. Duke was the first person to bring the bass up front like this.
Hmm. What's the color of Hodges' alto saxophone? To me, it's always got a burnished gold something in there.
Yeah, see? You got it, Chris. Yes, that's exactly what I feel. And with Hodges, I'm reminded of this program I saw of Willem de Kooning. He was doing a study in black and white, and he had a brush that was like maybe a foot long. It had maybe 7 or 8 hairs, something like that. And he practiced the stroke over and over and over again so that he could get just exactly the feel and movement that he wanted to apply to the canvas. And he walked to this white canvas after rehearsing this stroke maybe 100 times, and walked over and just went, and it was there, and it was perfect. And it reminded me of Johnny Hodges. You know, that I'm just waiting to hear if we maybe there's a little bit of that here. Yeah, there's that nice little glissando that he did. It's just, it starts from somewhere that moves to this beautiful little spot and then curls right around to the note, right where it's supposed to be. You know, it's just, it's burnished gold. It just glistens. Everything that he does is like that. If it's fast, if it's slow, whatever. That's how Johnny Hodges paints.
Dan Knight, you're wonderful, and you passed the blue and green test with flying colors, so to speak. Take us out on almost anything you'd like. Give us an image. Give us a color.
You know, I'm going to do this. This is a piece I wrote called "A Travers les Arbres." Pardon my bad French, but it's a walk through the forest, and this is a piece. This is a piece that by Maurice de Vlaminck, and it shows a really dark forest in France, and illuminated buildings in the middle. And I saw this, my wife and I were walking through a forest in France and saw this beautiful forest. We took a walk through it, and immediately the canopy of the forest shut out all the light except for just these few trees that were ahead. And this exactly.
You play it. I'll talk it from here. Dan Knight, thank you. Connection listeners, you can go to our website at theconnection.org to see some more of the art that Dan Knight has been painting with his piano. Thanks for help today from Thomas Terry, Tim Monroe, Rebecca Smuckler, Leela Azam, Matt Lieber, and Kim Bichari. Special thanks to Steiner and Sons for the use of a digital piano. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Maison Robert, offering guests options of fine French dining upstairs or bistro fare in the cafe, with 7 private party rooms for celebration.